The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Lynette's Shrimp House, located in Highland Park. It's Metro Detroit's premier destination, serving juicy fried shrimp, fish, and wings, alongside soul food sides and new additions to the menu, like turkey tacos and desserts. Located at 13548 Woodward in Highland Park, just north of the Davison, Lynette's is open for takeaway noon to 8 Tuesday and Thursday, noon to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Call now, get some Lynette's. Hey, greetings, everybody. Happy Friday, Friday the 13th of 2021. 13th of August already. Time is indeed flying. And, of course, it is time for another episode of The Week That Was here on The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Glad to have you with us today. And I fear that our audience may be a little bit smaller today because so many people are still without power. These storms that have been going through here have been wreaking havoc for the last few weeks. And I hope if you were catching up on this a little bit later on that you didn't lose too much stuff or that, you know, everybody's okay. But this is getting a little ridiculous to see like a week long wait for a lot of these people to get their power turned back on again. And for many people, this is the third and fourth time this summer. DTE has got some splaining to do, I think, for a lot of these folks. But the anger is palpable. I can see it out there. All right. So we've got a lot to talk about on today's program. My guests, as usual, Alan Langle and Nancy Derringer of Deadline Detroit are here with us. Thank you once again.
Uh-huh.
And of course, we have a couple of wily veterans of the program. Two lawyers, Todd Perkins and Steve Fishman, both here with us today. Gentlemen, thank you both.
Thank you.
Pleasure is ours. El gusto es mio.
There you go. All right. Let's, you know, okay, normally we do Schmuck of the Week at the end of the broadcast, and I'm doing something a little bit different today just because, you know, we've noticed that sometimes we, you know, our schmucks come, we've talked about them already, and then you get to the end and you're just rehashing stuff we've already done. So as topics go by today, I may be interspersing a few schmucks a little bit early. And I think we'll start with this one because this is something that happened late last week. But former acting attorney general Jeffrey Rosen actually testified on Capitol Hill for 7 hours behind closed doors the other day in a rush to do it before somebody could tell them that they were trying to block his testimony. That means he's got some things that he wants to get off his chest about what was going on in the days after the election in Washington, D.C. He wanted to make sure his side of the story got out to the people that are going to be judging whether or not there's some culpability here on the part of people like the Justice Department, the Trump administration, and everything else when it comes to the events leading up to January 6th and beyond. And we will continue to talk about this election stuff in just a minute because there's some goofy stuff that happened this week in regards to the Stop the Steal movement. But we're going to start with a schmuck from my friend Steve Fishman, because the person at the center of the controversy with the Department of Justice that we briefly discussed last week, we know a lot more now, is a guy that you are naming your schmuck of the week, Steve Fishman.
That's true. His name is Jeffrey Clark. And he was the schmuck from the Justice Department that came to Rosen and tried to persuade him to issue some kind of a proclamation or statement saying that there were problems with the election. Rosen, to his credit, refused to do it. The fascinating thing about Mr. Clark was you'll all be shocked to hear that he went to Harvard undergrad, because after all, Josh Hawley, all these, it's shocking to know that these guys can go to Harvard and be so stupid.
It's like Schmuck U. It's like Schmuck University, you know.
But the most interesting thing about Mr. Clark, I just looked this up today. He went to Harvard undergrad, and prior to going to law school at Georgetown, of course, not Wayne State or U of D, prior to going to Georgetown, he stopped to get a master's. And where did he get his master's? He got his master's at the University of Delaware. And what was the name of the section of the University of Delaware? It was the Joseph Biden School of Public Policy. And Jeffrey Clark actually got himself a master's degree from a program named after President Biden, which I found to be just too hilarious to pass up.
Well, Steve, that was just chapping his ass ever since he got that master's degree, that he just, you know, he was just waiting. He was waiting for his moment, and it came and he seized it.
Well, you know, I do want to talk a little bit about what he did, though. And I think the thing that I found most troubling in what we have learned about Rosen's testimony the other day, and some of it is leaked out, but not a lot yet. But one of the things he said is that Clark met with President Trump behind his back, right, which, you know, and did not know about it, which is a huge no-no. You know, you got to let your boss know if the president's summoning you to his office, and the boss has probably got to say no, I would think. Had he known, he probably would have refused to do it, but he said, don't ever do it again. But Trump had a direct line to one of these guys who then, without telling them, tried to sort of weasel this letter through that was going to somehow cast doubt on the results in a couple of states. That seems to me to be a big protocol violation.
This is a huge story. And again, I mean, what did we talk about last week? Scandal fatigue. I mean, I think that's, I can't believe it's not getting more attention. And I can only chalk it up to scandal fatigue.
I would defer to the lawyers on this, but I would think that this would be part of the whole conspiracy of undermining, you know, like the Capitol riot, inciting the riot, not going back to the White House, not doing anything about the riot, people dying. It seems like there's enough fodder there, including the trying to force the attorney generals to declare the, you know, the whole election a fraud. It seems like you could string together a pretty good indictment. I don't know what you guys.
I'm not the one that would be able to make that judgment call. Yes. Todd and Steve have both seen charges come down like that. What would you think?
I just think that the indictment, and I defer to Steve. I'm just getting out my two cents first because Steve will give you the gospel on this. But, you know, I just think that everybody's on pins and needles to make sure that they do it right and that it's not so highly politicized. It's politicized. It can't stop it from being that. But no, I just think everybody's so nervous about getting something right. I'll turn it over to Steve because he's gonna wow us.
No, I agree with Todd. I think that part of the problem, I think Merrick Garland has been overly cautious. Although keep in mind, Todd knows this as well as I do. When the United States Attorney's Office does things, it doesn't happen right away. Statute of limitations is 5 years. It takes time to get witnesses and to get stuff together. The testimony of Rosen, I think, at the Congress is important because now he's really put this guy under the gun and in the spot. But, you know, they're not going to want to prosecute anybody unless they think they can convict them 90%. Let's put it that way. Because what you don't want is just what Todd said. You don't want it to be looked at as a political football. I will be surprised if they make a criminal charge out of this business having to do with Clark. But one would certainly hope that he be summoned to testify in front of the Congress and try to answer for his misdeeds. Now, this is a guy, in addition to his educational background, he was a partner at Kirkland & Ellis, which I've told you guys before, one of my college teammates is retired partner at Kirkland & Ellis, a huge law firm. He's now working at one of those conservative think tank type things. He defended, when he was at Kirkland & Ellis, when he was working for the government, back when George W. Bush was president, he was absolutely opposed to anything having to do with climate change, right? God forbid we should do anything about that because it's not man-made, as we all know, at least as they all know. Let's put it that way.
Are we talking about your friend now or Jeffrey Clark?
No, the same guy, Clark.
Yeah, okay.
That's what he was doing. So he's a confirmed righty. But I think that in this case here, unless you get something, I mean, what he did is wrong for sure. Whether it's criminal, that's another issue. Just as an aside, to me, the criminal case that's waiting is Georgia. That's what I don't understand why they haven't. Hopefully they're doing something about that. That one, you got the case laid on a silver platter.
Well, speaking of Georgia, the U.S. attorney in Atlanta quit because he found out that Donald Trump was going to fire him for not raising questions about the validity of the Georgia election. He just went public, yesterday, I believe, with this thing. And rather than, you know, say no, they said, if you don't do this, you're going to be fired. So he quit.
The guy with the Indian name or the Korean name?
Korean name.
That's what I thought.
And I don't have it in front of me, but but that just came out yesterday. I mean, what kind of an environment was going on in that office at that time? I mean, it must have been incredibly toxic.
I have a question here in Georgia. Okay. Trump was convinced, and people who were around him convinced him that there was fraud in the Georgia election. Now, when he calls up the top election guy and says, hey, just give me 11,000 whatever votes, that's all I'm asking for. Is that not a decent defense to say, hey, there were 100,000. Trump was convinced there were 100,000. I'm just asking for 11,000 to correct the thing. Is that not a good defense for Trump in a case like that?
How can that be a defense? I don't care if it's 11,000, 11 million, or 11 votes.
Yeah.
You have no business, as the President of the United States, contacting the Secretary of State ex parte. You know that phrase, ex parte, that Pat and I have to put up with all the time in court?
Yeah.
Ex parte means by yourself, not letting anybody else know about it. And keep in mind that he's got it taped. It's taped. Even Trump is going to have a hard time saying that's not his voice, right? I don't care what he thought. He has no legal right to interfere with an election, and that's obstruction of justice. Agreed, Todd?
Right.
I absolutely agree, but it's a violation of every protocol. I mean, you know, you got church and state over here. You've got a separation of powers in the government. I mean, he's gone from, okay, so what method did he use? I mean, you can do ex-party things in the world where it's not necessarily legal, but you're the president of the United States calling a secretary of state of the state of Georgia. Not only that, you're also threatening him.
Right.
And you're also threatening him. So, you know, that's clearly what Steve was relating to, the obstruction of justice. I mean, because, you know, just imagine this guy in front of, you know, imagine these facts in front of Judge Cleveland with an obstruction of justice after, you know, he's going through the roof on the guidelines. I mean, this is I see a note. Somebody said that's perfectly legal, but
No, that's from Steve, who says Trump will be reinstated. And I forgot to tell you, it's reinstatement day. Happy reinstatement day, everybody.
is today reinstatement day?
Today is reinstatement day. Yes, absolutely. And so I wanted to put that comment up there just because it leads me so nicely into my next segment. There are still people out there that are carrying water for Donald Trump with the big lie. And of course, some of them are finding themselves in a lot of trouble for this. But let's start with MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell. He had a symposium in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, over the last 3 days, where he was laying out his quote unquote evidence for the election fraud, which was just the weirdest thing I've watched in a long time. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I stuck around long enough to realize that this was just complete lunacy and that we are witnessing a man unravel in front of our very eyes. I mean, his sanity is in question at this point, given the convoluted logic that he was spewing the other day. And
you mean the pillow guy?
Yeah. Like the stream of, he would be on the stage for like an hour and a half at a time, just rambling about nothing. I mean,
he sounds like he's back sucking the glass dick again. You know what I mean?
I didn't want to say that.
that's what they call it on the street. You know, I'm very street for a kid.
Yes, he's very savvy. Street
Gross pointers, they're streetwise.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. GPW.
We stayed away from them when we were.
No, he does. He really does sound like he's smoking crack again. So
it was not a good performance.
I think the drugs just got better.
Well, you know, he basically admitted that the data that he had been corrupted in some capacity. I'm kind of thinking garbage in, garbage out, Mike, but that's just what I'm thinking about that one. But then at one point, he actually walked off the stage when they got word that the courts were going to let the defamation suit go that Dominion Voting Systems had brought against Mike Lindell, Lynn Wood, and Rudy Giuliani. Those cases all get to go forward. And Mike Lindell's got something to worry about here. That defamation case looks pretty strong. That company can make a provable case that their reputation has been damaged.
Let me toss this out. I think we've discussed this before, but if we haven't, it's something that's certainly worth thinking about. I'm a firm believer, and you use Gawker dance as something. The only way you can do things to people like Lindell or people like Linwood is hit them in the pocketbook. And I think that lawsuits are the exact way that you go forward. And quite frankly, if I could change anything in this country, I'll tell you what I'd change. I would get rid of the immunity that the gun manufacturers have, right? That keeps them from being sued, although the Mexicans did sue them, I saw last week. But if you start hitting them in the pocketbook, like Lindell, all of a sudden, wait a minute, now I used to be a zillionaire and now I got nothing because they nailed me for who knows how much. It sounds crazy, and it sounds like it's only lawyers talking because, oh, yeah, you lawyers think you can do a whole hell of a lot. But in all honesty, I'm a firm believer in that. I think
it's going to affect their friends. You know, you use them as the example. I mean, I think Steve is on. I mean, I totally agree with that. And it's, you know, that's what they're talking about, taking away the immunity for police officers to be able to hit their retirements for people who have done egregious acts. You know, so you know, it's the same thing. I think money is the key. I mean, and these guys, they rule from a roost because they have money. And, you know, if you take that away, they have nothing. Nothing.
Well, and I think the case here is much greater than Peter Thiel had against Gawker, and he got a $141 million judgment and essentially shut the site down. I mean, this is, I mean, Peter Thiel, I don't think was materially hurt by somebody revealing that he's gay and, you know, before he was ready for that. But I mean, can you imagine Dominion trying to sell a voting system to any municipality or any state in the union?
You've been shut out of every state now that has a legislature that is made up of Republican majorities or Republican governor. And KISS, because none of them would actually sign a contract with that company right now. They might honor their existing contract with them, but once it's up for review in a couple of years, they're going to say no. And so they could make a case that they're losing out on millions and millions of dollars because of reputational damage. And reading the judge's decision, by the way, who was a Trump appointee, who basically picked apart their arguments, just saying your defense is really, really weak on this. And Dominion has every right to go forward with this case. I mean, it's a high bar for defamation.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not easy to do that. But at the same time, I mean, damages in a case like this, I'm not sure what they could amount to, but what is reputational damage worth? I mean, because you could sit there and say it's worth this much in current earnings, but future earnings are also impacted. So could this get into the billions?
If you've ruined the entire company, I don't know.
You can identify it by the very fact that right now they're being held against any contracts, any new contracts going forward where they're Republican majorities or Republican governors. So you can quantify what their losses are going to be. So, and, you know, that's, you know, the thing is, a lot of times people say, oh, that's too spurious or that's too way out for me to be able to determine what their losses are. They can identify their losses. And you know, the thing is, the worst part about it is it's a lie. The systems, the machines do work. You know what I mean? And it's just, it's unfortunate. But I go back to what Steve says. You hit these guys, you hit this group of set of people, I guarantee you it'll stop a lot of that shit going forward.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I mean, you know, in the meantime, we do get to live through the symposium, which was kind of fun. And we should have the results from the Arizona Fraudit coming up pretty soon as well, even though they've missed their deadline that the state imposed on them. So they're, you know, it doesn't matter what they say, but they're going to make hay out of it and try to keep this alive as long as they can, because as I've said time and time again, there are people that are making money off of you by keeping this grift going. Go ahead, Nancy.
I was just going to say, first, I have two things to say. Peter Thiel was not the one who sued Gawker and got $141 million. He financed the lawyer that allowed Hulk Hogan to do this. But he did it because he was pissed that Gawker had called him out as gay before he was ready. But that's neither here nor there. I mean, if I could just use this as a pivot into what I thought was an interesting story this week by Craig Mauger, who writes for the Detroit News, about how these big lie candidates are rising very quickly in the Michigan Republican Party and may end up as, could easily end up as the nominee for some of these statewide offices. And he named Matt DiPerno in Kalamazoo, who's declared for attorney general.
Yep.
And a woman named Christina Caramo, I think.
Who yes. Wants to yeah. Be Caramo.
Caramo, who wants to be Secretary of State. And both of them are election, you know, they're election conspiracists. And I guess I have to think, I mean, I never say never, but I have to think these are candidates that even given the 4 years that we will have gone through by the time the election comes around, I cannot believe that Christina, what's her face, is going to be able to whip Jocelyn Benson and certainly Matt DiPerno is not going to be any match for Dana Nessel.
I still want to watch that debate.
Yeah, I know. My point is, I mean, what damage is this doing to the Republican Party in Michigan and elsewhere?
I don't think they've figured that out yet. And you know, you look at what happened this week in Washington with the bipartisan bill. You can clearly say that there are a number of senators that are trying to peel themselves away from that wing of the party and trying to sort of reclaim some sort of moderate ground a little bit and at least get some money back to their districts. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So, I mean, I think there are some people that recognize there needs to be some sort of a return to sanity because what they're seeing out there right now is getting weirder and weirder by the day. And let's focus then on COVID for just a couple of minutes and the response we have seen from some of the Trump wing governors when it comes to COVID. we've got a huge outbreak. Florida is, again, leading the country right now in cases, yet they are locked in this fight as to whether or not local units of government can decide whether or not there should be a mask mandate in their communities or in their schools. And, you know, what's his face? DeSantis is threatening to, like, withhold their funding for schools if they try to do this, withholding funding for some of these local municipalities if they want to overrule them on this mask mandate and make it illegal to do it. Texas is trying to do the same thing. Ohio's got a bill in there to do the same thing right now to make it so local communities can't override what the governor says. And if the governor says no masks, no masks. Really stupid.
I mean, it's just sort of an extension of Trump. I mean, it's the whole anti-intellectual, anti-science. I know better than you. I know more than you, even though I know not nearly as much as you. And it's just part of the Trump thing. I mean, he is trying to really make himself as a little bit more of a polished version of Trump, but with the same level of stupidity.
Well, I mean, some of these states are even trying to stop, universities, school systems, whatever, again, from testing. I mean, it's not just masks and everything. They're saying you can't require tests. And it's like, how the hell are we ever going to get a hold of this ridiculous
thing? The Supreme Court took care of that yesterday. Barrett basically just told these people who are challenging Indiana University's COVID vaccine requirement, and she just shut it down. She's like, we're not even going to hear this case.
Well, wait, Craig, but keep in mind what was in front of her. And honestly, I wasn't certain myself till I talked to one of our federal judges this morning. What was in front of her, that was a request for an injunction. Okay.
Yeah.
So the district judge, that's not a situation where she's saying we're never going to hear this case because she's not in the position to say that. That was just, she sustained essentially the circuit, the Fifth Circuit, I think it was, or the Seventh, one of the two, which sustained the district judge in not granting the injunction. Just make sure everybody understands that. This doesn't mean that case itself can't eventually wind up being litigated and blah, blah, blah.
Well, hopefully by the time, you know, all these universities go through with this and everybody starts getting vaccinated, and all their employees and companies are doing this now, that'll be a moot point and the case won't matter that much.
It's so ridiculous in that sense that you look at Louisiana. I was listening to some story about, I think Don Lemon is from Louisiana. So he went down there and he's talking about that. You know, they had 29 cases or something like that. At the beginning of July 1, now they have 200, it's 10 times whatever they had. And it's, you know, these are people who are unvaccinated, besides wearing the mask, you know, they're talking about besides being unvaccinated, why not wear the mask? You know, one of the things that a friend of mine was saying, and, you know, this is more street talk, so to speak, rather than the science. But has anybody recognized how many colds have you had since you've been wearing the mask? No one's gotten the flu, you know, because the thing is, you're not sharing with the air from other people. So it's, you know, it's just so smart. I used to think 15 years ago, I'm walking through the airport and I'd see someone from China, China descent or, Chinese nationals walk through the airport. Oftentimes you see them with the mask on. I said, what do they know that I don't know? You know what I'm saying? But they, it's a real thing.
Interesting point you made there. And I read this morning and I can't remember the name of the company. They're a West Michigan based pharmaceutical company. They make cold remedies and stuff like that. They actually had to downgrade their earnings expectations because of an incredibly weak cold and cough season last year. It impacted their earnings. I mean, that's how few people had it. They sold a lot less product. And so therefore they're like, sorry, the share prices are not where we need them to be. We expect this to rebound at some point, but yeah. So
part of that also, I agree with Todd. I think 90% of that is because we are wearing masks where we were wearing masks out outdoors. But I think also there's also that we're just not getting out as much as we used to. I mean, we're not working in offices in, many of
washing
us.
Washing hands.
Not going to a lot of parties, indoor parties.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, seriously, I mean, I carry hand sanitizer around with me these days. And every time, you're in a place and you touch a door handle, I'm like, yeah, maybe I should use some of that stuff. We're a little bit more careful than we used to be. But, there's a column I wanted to point out to everybody just because I think everybody should read it. Our friend Susan Demas, who is a frequent guest on this program, writes for the Michigan Advance, michiganadvance.com. She wrote a piece this week, said, "We've coddled ignorance for years. Now we're all paying the price with COVID." And it's just, here's the line that I loved. It says, knuckle draggers do not deserve veto power over our safety. The only way we will make COVID an occasional nuisance instead of a mortal threat to everyone's health is with vaccine mandates for everything from school to concerts to travel. And I agree with her. But I like the way that she phrased it, you know, saying, why are we letting the most ignorant of us dictate what happens here?
But have you heard the fact that there's always been people who believed in not vax and anti-vax people, as they call them. Right. And one of the reporters, you know, you watch a lot of TV and it's just I'm glued to the TV when it comes to issues regarding COVID. He says, look, it just gave those people a platform that, you know, because there's a certain segment of the population that have never believed in vaccinations. It was a very small segment. But with this hysteria that it's created a platform now, now they have a base. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, that's the only reason, you know, because look. You know, this is just like it's going to be like the polio vaccine, you know, and the chickenpox vaccine that we have now. Hopefully, did it get declared this week that it was outside of the emergency protocol?
Well, they were suggesting that it could happen by the end of the month. That's the earliest I've seen.
Why are they dragging their feet on this? I mean, that Alzheimer's, that bullshit Alzheimer's drug, like sailed through, and here we have something that is far greater consequence, and it's still, they're saying maybe by the end of September. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, hey, look, I'd rather
people got to go on vacation.
Well, speaking of which, I'm planning a trip, fingers crossed, but I just applied for my vaccine passport in Europe. So I'm going to be, if I get it, I'll be carrying a phone with a QR code on it, and they will check it so that I can go into restaurants, into museums, into theaters, whatever. And I am like, hey, maybe this is the way we ought to do it.
Well, you know, like I said, there's going to be a lot of people that are just, you know, either they don't really care that much about it, they don't think they're going to be infected, but they're going to get the vaccination because their job is going to depend on it, or the concert they want to go to is going to depend on it. More right. and more artists are now coming forward and saying, yep, negative test within 48 hours, or you've got proof of your vaccination, or else you can't come in.
Right.
I'm all in favor of that. I think it's going to work. And hopefully, you know, you get some Dave of those people Chappelle. Who are just reluctant. They're not like, you know, there's no religious exemption request here. They just don't like getting shots. I mean, there's a lot of people like that and just don't like going to the doctor.
I don't understand. I think
Dave Chappelle is, I can't remember when his show is, but he's got like 7 shows coming up over at the Fillmore. Although the prices of the tickets are
$500. The price,
yeah, 500. I saw some were like 1300, and it's just it's crazy.
Wow.
To see all it. Right. All right. All right. At the same time, though, I mean, who was going with the Texas legislature? Was that you, Alan? Or was that that was Todd Perkins. Todd, is this the right time for your schmuck of the week?
You know, it is. And I've had so many in my head from, you know, I just, you know, from the. Not even Cuomo, but the tangential people around Cuomo with this lawyer, that press conference. But I have to go with the Texas legislature. You know, they passed the legislation. You know, you still have those other Congress people or legislators in the House who are working and trying to work and not get arrested, you know, because they want to arrest these people for taking a stance on something that they believe in. And that their constituents, their representatives, and they're true representatives of their constituents. And, you know, they just won't let it go. They want blood. And they, you know, not only have you won, but you also want to continue to inundate and just.
The arrest warrants, the arrest warrants for the Democrats were pretty damn ridiculous.
Yeah. What do you think of Cuomo's resignation?
Jumping right to that one now. Okay.
Because I love when he goes. Did I put my hand on a breast? Well, yes, but I didn't know that things had changed, that you couldn't do that kind of stuff.
I didn't realize
that a different generation had come along. You can't put your hand on a woman's breast at work.
Easy, Don Draper. No, I mean, come on.
The woman, his lawyer before, she sets up and uses this, you know, it gives the montage of some formality using the COVID briefing room. So she had to get permission to do that. And, you know, she spends all this time with the PowerPoint and everything. She really kind of, you know, victimizes the victims in this matter. And then he goes and resigns. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think he realized that. I mean, Look, the reaction to that press conference was swift. When she's out there and like little, I mean, tiny little things in their stories that didn't quite line up, and she's going to try to exploit that, obviously, to attack their credibility. That's a horrible look. It just it really is. And I think he looked at that, had the press conference, and realized, you know what? I think I'm kind of screwed here. I don't have a choice.
Steve is burning to talk to us.
I want to hear Nance first, and then me.
I was just going to say my favorite item or moment in this was the Jesse Waters. For once, I'm going to give some credit to Fox, which had a picture of him, which had a still of Cuomo and the super underneath it said, "I'm not a pervert. I'm just Italian."
Ouch.
So I think that my wife had a little gathering at the house yesterday. There were six women, all educated women. One, by the way, happens to be Italian, and she was so offended by that statement, basically, that, look, that's what the Italians do. She just thought that was the worst of all. But everybody agreed, and this is the thing that gets me. Every time we have this conversation, whether it was about Trump or any of the rest of these men that can't keep their hands off women, it's astounding that when you talk to women, especially if they're up into our age group, I don't know one who hasn't had the same thing happen to her in some degree or other, right?
Yeah.
Everybody has had it happen. Mm-hmm. That was the first thing. The second thing to me is that it's astounding that these guys, Cuomo's not accused, at least so far, of having sex with, of rape or anything like that. What is so difficult about, instead of trying to make all these excuses and have the woman up there with her PowerPoint, just getting up and saying, look, I acted like an asshole and I'm sorry. And I tell my daughters the same thing. If you have anybody that acts like I did around you, you smack them right across the face. Why is that so difficult for these guys, particularly after he's resigned? The third thing is, it is astounding to me, and it always is astounding. Maybe Nancy or other females can give some kind of an explanation for it. The juvenility of the behavior. The juvenile nature of that behavior. Who would talk to 22 or 24 or 26-year-old young women working for you when you're in your 60s? Who would talk like that? Who would suggest, why don't you wear a skirt, Miss State Trooper? Why are you wearing a uniform? What kind of a background did this guy have? These guys don't know how to talk to women.
Well, he comes off. He comes off and says, oh, I didn't realize that times had changed. Did I do that? Yes, but I didn't realize. It's like times have changed. It's like, sorry, we were doing at the Detroit News in the 90s. We had sexual harassment training things. I was at the Post in 97. I think we had to take an online computer test. It's not like, holy shit, where did that stuff come from?
No, but these guys, I could put it in general terms. It's almost like sometimes how, Steve and I will talk about police officers who go in and become police officers because they were schmucks in high school and want to have the power to take, take their whatever out on people. But they just never, I guarantee you, in high school, they didn't know how to talk to girls in. I mean, because they don't talk to girls like people. They talk to girls like objects. And so now you've got power. You're going to use the power to treat an object almost like it's a car. You know what I'm saying?
Why do you think all the women in Trump world dress and look basically the same?
Right. It's
Fox world too. Yeah, but it's also the Trump world. It's like the long hair with the mermaid curls, lots of makeup, the form fitting sheath dress. It's not too short, because it follows your body. And then the stiletto heels, and not just any old heel. It's got to be, a big, big ass heel. I mean, they were rewarded for that. If you learn early on that you if you want to rise in the world, you gotta have somebody who's willing to promote you. And that's how they learn. So,
As you say that, Nancy, what really gets me angry is that what about the kids, the friends of his. Friends of Trump's that had women, children that worked for him. I think to myself, and who fit that profile. There was a lot of them, and I think about I'm upset with those fathers now.
How many times have you seen Donald Trump interact with his own daughter? Not the other.
I didn't say
Tiffany. I'm talking about Ivanka. you know, the butt pat on the stage of the Republican convention in 2016. He gives her a little pat on the fanny. He kisses her on the lips, which is really weird. I mean, you know, it's like you kissed her on father. It's got to be like on the
I wouldn't even kiss her on the lips.
Yeah, that's a Tom. I mean, that's what they call a Tom Brady kiss,
right? And then Pete Lucido, he's like Mr. Ass Grab too. So you know,
I think just this is my summary of the whole thing. I think the saddest part of it is that men who are like that, they never ever have the kind of relationships with females. And I'm not talking about it's sex or anything like that. They don't even know how to interact with intelligent, educated, skilled females. And they miss out on everything entirely because of that, because of their inability to actually have conversation. And that to me is what's brought out when you hear things like Cuomo talking the way he's talking. This is a guy who's educated, who's slick enough politically to have attained, you know, where he's gotten to, and he can't speak to a female. That is crazy. And that's really,
you know. I think I read one of these, this is one of these like pop psychology things, but I think I read somewhere that like within 30 seconds of meeting a new person, a new woman, assuming he's heterosexual, a man is putting her in the would do it with her, would not do it with her, right? You know, I mean, I won't use the street language. I think if you give women another 30 seconds, I think a lot of them will do the same thing. And then if you give women 30 seconds, it would be marry, not marry. So, and I don't know. I mean, part of it is the way guys are, but at the same time, I don't want to say that because it gives you a way out. And, you know, you just have to learn to control yourself.
So here's a quick question to sort of wrap this up here. What should CNN do about his brother?
Ooh, boy, that's a good question.
I defer to you guys. You guys are the media.
He crossed a couple of lines there.
He crossed some big lines.
I'd say, I mean, part of it, the fact that he talked to his brother about it is, I think, is fine. The part that he participated in a staff meeting and it was really an official staff meeting to talk about it is beyond the pale there.
Well, and coming up with communication strategies, you know?
Right.
You should say to keep the media off your back.
I mean, there'd be absolutely nothing wrong with, I mean, you know, people could raise issues, but I mean, him calling his brother at a personal phone call, getting together with him and saying, here's what you need to do. That would be expected, but to be part of the, you know, I don't know. I think maybe they should suspend him at minimum.
And I think this is a great time for him to take a long vacation.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it's also going to come down to what are his ratings. His ratings aren't the greatest. You know what I'm saying? I think his ratings were higher because of his brother being in office. Now that his brother's not in office, I mean, it comes down to dollars and cents. You know, I think if we had a theme for this episode of the Folly Show, you know, Steve started it off. It's all about dollars and cents, you know, and, you know, if he's not doing well, you know, and he does okay. But I think, you know, with his brother no longer being governor, you know, I think the
Cuomo swagger, the machismo Cuomo thing is, I think people are going to tire of it now that, you know, the governor's going. I mean, his brother has to say they're one and the same in many ways.
Yeah. And you know, they're fake arguments on the TV when they used to be on to josh with each other, you know, and talk about their mom all the time. And
mom always liked you best.
Yeah, exactly.
Brother's act.
Yeah, exactly. So enough of that. But all right. Speaking of dollars and cents, really kind of historic action in Washington in terms of spending. You've got the $1.5 trillion infrastructure bill with bipartisan support. Immediately after that, the Senate works on preliminary approval of this $3.5 trillion human infrastructure bill that is basically a wish list for Democrats for all the different types of programs they've wanted to fund for years. Now, there's a bit of a skirmish that is breaking out between the moderates, Democrats, and, of course, the more progressive Democrats about which bill needs to get passed first. Like I said, the Democrats are really good at screwing up their own stuff. I think they're going to come together at some point and get all this stuff done, because I think they're all going to have to realize that this is going to be the most significant piece of progressive legislation since the New Deal. They don't get opportunities to do big stuff like this very often. And the infrastructure spending is going to make it smoother for everybody, because everybody's going to see something in their district that they like from this spending. And a whole lot of people in the next year might get used to some of the other changes that come when it comes to childcare, when it comes to free community college, so many other different things that are in this bill. Are the Democrats going to find a way to squabble their way out of success here?
That's interesting. I mean, we've all known that there's going to be, or there's chips in the frame of the unity in the Democratic Party, just like in the Republican Party. It's just not as bad. I mean, it's not as toxic, I don't think. But, you know, money money makes people act different ways. You know, ask some probate lawyers that, you know, it just does. I mean, but, you know, we've known about these, you know, like AOC. I mean, you know, Biden's looking over his shoulder to see what she and her crew are going to do. And those are the ones who are leading the more progressive charge. I don't know.
Go ahead, Steve.
I think at the end of the day, I mean, I don't see that the Democrats have a choice. They have to pass the infrastructure bill. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, though, the squabble, whatever. I think what you said is exactly right. This is an opportunity, what the Great Society, the New Deal, and that's about it. And for them to think, I don't care. I'm not even sure I buy into these things, the progressives and the moderates, whatever it is. The lefties is the way I always look at it. For them to think that they're going to be able to pull out the stuff that they want to do, if that were the case, Bernie Sanders would have won the nomination the last two times. There's just not as much support there as there is noise. And I think that the idea, what you said is exactly true. You pass the infrastructure bill, there's going to be communities everywhere. Right. Where they're going to say, hey, that bridge that's been so screwed up for the last 10 years. Look, they're fixing it. I mean, from small thing like that to large projects. I personally think at the end of the day, they're going to pass it. They'll figure it out. And that's wishful thinking. But I hope like hell that the lefties don't feel like, OK, we're going to go down with the Titanic. Right. Rather than pass what we can pass. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. And I mean, these are not just, you know, they're always like, well, we don't like incrementalism. We need bold change now. I've never seen dollars like this talked about for any of these programs in my lifetime. This would be a huge
increment.
It's a big increment. And it's, you know, it seems to me that, like, look, bite your tongue, hold your nose, whatever you got to do, get it done, because this is as good as it's going to get right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying don't keep fighting for these things down the road, but, you know, live to fight another day. Meanwhile, take a big chunk of turf that you can get right now. This is like a 60-yard pass down the sideline here to set you up in the red zone. This is a huge move forward. If you're a Democrat and you've got a D next to your name, regardless of what wing you're in, you got to do the right thing here and figure out that if you really believe that this kind of spending and these types of programs are going to advance people's lives and not corporations for the first time in a long time, you've got to vote for this.
Mm-hmm. Can I say one thing about the human infrastructure bill though?
Yeah.
I had an editor a few years back who said something that has stuck with me ever since. And he said, I'm in favor of big spending when it benefits children. He said, because in this country now, all of our social support comes at the end of, you know, Medicare, Social Security, all this stuff. And there's a case, that's a good thing. But at the same time, I think if you want to make a case for fairness, it's like, give children the best start in life that you can, and then leave the rest of it up to them. And that, I think in terms of the universal pre-K,
huge,
the child care tax or child care support, just the child tax credit, which is going to put more food and better food on the table in a lot of these low-income homes, up to probably, I would consider, like 2 years of community college. I mean,
well, they're talking about four. You know, well, yeah, 2 years, 2 years of free community college.
Yeah, 2 years of free community college. And, you know, because back when we made all of these deals for, you know, free public education and so forth, you could be a middle class wage earning American with a high school education. That simply isn't the case anymore. If you want to be in the middle class now, you need at least some post-secondary education, training, skill training, whatever. You just need that. And, you know, we need to just renegotiate these deals among ourselves from time to time. And I, you know, this is huge. So that's just me.
I think so too. Like I said, these opportunities don't come along very often. We're right in a position to actually do this. Last time they passed Obamacare, right? I mean, and obviously healthcare is one of those things that is really, really difficult to navigate. Like I said, using the shield of the infrastructure bill to then use reconciliation for the other stuff that you want, knowing that you would never pass, you know, knowing that you'd never get by a filibuster for a lot of those programs. It was a good strategy on the part of Schumer, and I think it's going to work in the end, and there's going to be some adjustments, obviously, but look for some big changes by January of next year. Mm-hmm. All right. We need to move on here. And what did I want to get to? Oh, yeah. Alan Lengel, I think it's time for you to nominate your schmuck of the week, because we are watching a particular situation just go downhill dramatically, rather quickly.
I think we're all it's American foreign policy of nation building, and we see Afghanistan. You know, we went in there in 2001, right after 2001. Been there for 20 years. We've lost 2,300 soldiers. There were 20,000 people wounded, and we see just like that, like a tinderbox. The country is just going up in flames, and it just shows how poor the execution is. How you know, and it certainly raises questions of whether should have been there in the first place. I mean, we went there because of Al-Qaeda. Now there's talk of Al-Qaeda, some resurgence there. And now we're sending 3,000 troops back to rescue our people at the embassy. We're not going to be able to have an embassy there. I mean, they're telling the Taliban.
It's Saigon and Benghazi.
But the interesting thing about this is that, we spent how much time? $3 trillion in trying to get the Afghan forces ready. They are proving to be marginally less effective than the Maginot Line. And I don't know if it's because their heart's not in it. Maybe they don't care. I mean, that's entirely possible that they're like not so dedicated, to defeating the Taliban. These are people that are, in many cases, people they know, family members, whatever. I just don't think that they're willing to, to put their lives on the line in that way anymore.
It reminds me of 20 years in Poland when Germany was invading Poland. My father was in the army. They told people to just take off your uniforms and go. Because you're not going to fight, with horses and stuff. You're not going to fight the tanks rolling in. And it seems they're not even putting up any resistance. They're just like, let's get the hell out of here.
Go ahead, Steve.
I don't know if you all have been reading these excerpts from the book that's on the Washington Post website. There have been two. There's a third one going to be today. I think the worst thing about all of this, whether it's Vietnam, whether it's Iraq, whether it's Afghanistan, is the lies that are told by our government. And it doesn't matter whether it was George W. Bush or Barack Obama, the same bullshit that we heard, those of us who are old enough to remember Vietnam, victory's around the corner, it's just about ready to blah, blah, blah. I think that is the single thing that sticks with me. Mm-hmm. Vietnam was, 50 years ago? It's 55 years ago, and nothing has changed. When you read this column, and I'm gonna get the book, it's amazing the consistency of the lies, no matter who's the president, no matter which party is in power. It's the same bullshit that you're getting from the military people and then being echoed by the politicians. And I think I've said this before here. If you want to read a great book about the problems in the American military and the problems with our society, Andrew Bacevich, Bacevich, a book called Breach of Trust. You can read it in one night because you won't want to put it down. And he talks about exactly what we're talking about, that when you lie to the public and you try to tell the public that this is what we're doing and therefore it's worth your son or your daughter, then you have to bear the consequences of that. You cannot tell lies and then all of a sudden wring your hands like people are doing now. Oh, my God, what are we going to do with the Afghans? Ask people who lost their kids in that war.
Well, just a reminder. If you are interested in learning a little bit more about this and the situation that we're in right now, and it was inevitable that we were going to be in this situation at some point when we left this country. I did an interview with Saeed Khan, which is on DeadlineDetroit.com, talking about this. And he basically just said, look, China is ready to step into the void and they are going to. And it's just a matter of time. So,
we'll see. You think about it, as far as the United States is in my lifetime, I think the only thing we've ever won, a military battle we've ever won, was Grenada.
we did take out, what's his face in Panama?
Manuel Noriega.
Noriega, that's right.
We took him out, but I'm saying, these are things that, smaller nations could take care of on their own. But yeah, you're right about China. Look how China has filled in and taken over in Africa. You know, they own,
because they're spending money. I mean, yes. they're not yeah. fighting wars or trying to train an army. They're coming in and they're putting in infrastructure, and they're putting in, I mean, they're building the, talk about nation building. I mean, nation building is more than just army building. But that's what.
Well, they're not nation building. They're taking advantage of people too, because they'll loan those African nations all that money, knowing they can't pay it back, and then they're just going to take it over. You know, that's
eventually. But if the Russians couldn't succeed in 13 years, there was no way we were going to do it. So
All right, we got to move on here real quick. And
good
I'll tell
meal.
You
can buy people off with a good meal.
There is one tradition that we have in the city of Detroit, and that it is every year that ends with the number one. About this time, a mayor in the city of Detroit is bitching about the census count. That's just true, because we've been shrinking for a long time. It looked like the census count just came out yesterday, and I haven't had a whole lot of time to really dig through it. But it does look like Detroit lost another 10% of its population, at least according to the official numbers. Mayor Duggan, of course, says they're getting ready to challenge this. Nancy, you get to go first, because you are a census worker in the city of Detroit. It was not easy getting people to count to be counted.
No, not at all. And I think it's probably not that different from any other year. As I think I said before on the show, there's very little reason for a low income family in Detroit to open the door to a nice white lady standing there with a clipboard in her hand. But at the same time, there were so many strikes against an accurate count this year. There was the pandemic. Some people weren't opening their door to anyone. I keep coming back to the Ring doorbell. I was like, I can't tell you how many houses I looked at that were like, nobody lives there. It looks like half abandoned, but there's a nice new Ring doorbell on the front door. And it's because people want to know who's out there.
Absolutely.
Culturally, we just don't answer the door anymore. Now, most people, you could do it online, and most people did, but what the enumerators did this time was to clean up after the people or the houses we didn't hear from online. And, the culture of answering your door is just very different now than it was 10, 20 years ago. People just don't do it. If your friend is out there, they call you or they text you. They don't knock on the door or ring the doorbell. So
no,
unless it's a sweepstakes.
It's like a phone call. Same
unless
thing.
You won the sweepstakes.
Yeah, I should have had a bunch of balloons.
Well, so wait, process servers need to show up with balloons at the front door, and people will sit there and answer. There you go. That might help them in their jobs a little bit. Look. The census needs to update their tactics a little bit in that, look, there is a lot of data that is out there that they should be allowed to use in calculating whether or not their estimates are good and their final count. I mean, look at how many customers there are that actually have electricity going to homes. Look at postal service data. Even the people that send you those Valpak coupons have some of the most sophisticated occupancy data in the world.
Right.
They can tell you very much better than the census can as to how many people are living in any neighborhood and which houses are occupied and which ones aren't.
Well, Craig, as a former land banker, you should know. I mean, I don't know how much coordination
this stuff
done between the land bank and the census, but I was sent out on a lot of addresses that were vacant lots. And the reason you knew a house had been there was because you could see the driveway cut in the curb, but it was just a green field.
Well, one of your fellow census takers called me, Lex Cooney, who's been program before, called me with a problem saying he had this data and the people in Chicago weren't going to allow them to use it, even though they'd gotten approval. So they weren't even talking to each other about which data they could use to determine occupancy, especially in multifamily dwellings. I actually had to make a call to the mayor's office to say, hey, you should know about this. The person who was actually in charge of counting the census is a friend of mine. And I said, you should know about this. She made a phone call. So finally, we're able to do it. But they're already 2-3 weeks into the process.
Right.
And it's just,
we cannot count out the Trump fuck up factor.
Well,
which is not that the census was deliberately monkey wrenched in the name of, undercounting a city.
Well, they certainly pushed to limit the amount of time.
But that they put morons in charge of it because it was a political patronage position, and that's who they got.
And we're seeing the same results with the post office these days.
Right.
And so, all right, we've got to move on. We're running out of time. I do have a couple of other schmucks that are out there. Nancy, you have not delivered your schmuck yet.
No, I haven't. And I always bring a main schmuck and a backup schmuck.
That's fine.
Swiftly run through both of them. My main schmuck, I think, is Marjorie Taylor Greene. who's
always a good
apparently
one.
Apparently was on somewhere this week saying, waving off the idea that exploding or hospitals exploding with COVID patients was no big deal because we all got to die sometimes. And it's, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, a lot of people like to shit talk Rashida Tlaib who don't live around here. And what they don't understand about her is that she is in her district a lot. She talks to people. She's warm. She delivers excellent constituent services at the grassroots level. And that's why I believe that she's going to serve in Congress until she's just tired of it and resigns on her own.
Well, she certainly isn't. She's certainly not going to be the ambassador to Israel anytime soon.
No,
so.
I don't think so. For sure. But I don't know that we can say that about Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I mean, if you're
in the Deep South now, which she is, and the Deep South is on fire with COVID and acting like it's no big deal, I don't see. I mean, she's in a gerrymandered district; she'll be reelected, but. You know, there you go.
All right. So that was A. Who's B?
And B is Tucker Carlson, because he actually went, he spent a week in Hungary passing along their propaganda about Viktor Orban. And it all capped off with a speech last Saturday. So it was after the show, in which he said, "I love America. I think my country is the best in the world. But don't tell me America is more free than Hungary." Boy is right.
I've got a couple here. My first one, and this is actually dates back to like January, but we just found out about it because the previously mentioned lawsuit that Dominion is bringing against these, you know, big lie people. One of the filings was against the OAN network, One America News. Back in January, they were talking about, you know, the likelihood of there being a rigged election. And they brought in this guy that they presented as a, quote, expert mathematician. Well, this guy wasn't really, you know, an expert mathematician. His name was Edward Solomon. He took a couple of classes in college, but he never graduated. And in their filing, they say he is not an expert mathematician, but, quote, was in fact a convicted felon with no college degree. His current job was setting up swing sets in Long Island, New York.
Pretty close.
And they brought this guy on.
Matt Damon in Good Will Hunting, you know, solved that equation, and like he was just a janitor.
Yeah. That was also fiction. So anyway, that's one. And two, I want to go with Rand Paul, and this is a duel. It's Rand Paul and Ron DeSantis because it involves this Remdesivir stuff and Regeneron, this company. So Rand Paul and his wife, after getting a briefing about COVID and what was going on, what the potential cures were, this is before the public knew a whole lot about it. He and his wife went out and bought a whole bunch of stock in the company that makes Remdesivir. And by the way, they just filed their notice this week, 16 months after they made the initial investment. And the staffer goes, "All I can think of is I just forgot to transmit it." Those campaign finance reports and all that kind of stuff get filed on a regular basis. You're not going to take a big, giant, you know, tens of thousands of dollar investment into this company and just be like, "Oh, I forgot that one." So 16 months later, it's clear that Congressman looks like, "I've got insider knowledge. We've seen this before. I'm going to buy stock in this company because this stuff's going to blow up." Now, he didn't end up making a lot of money on it because, you know, Remdesivir never really turned out to be as big as President Trump was hoping it would be. But anyway, Congress people should be able to buy and sell stocks, period.
I agree. That seems like
something good. But this also goes into Ron DeSantis, because this is a guy who doesn't want to have, you know, mass vaccination mandates. He doesn't want mask mandates, but he is setting up Remdesivir clinics in his state to give people this emergency treatment because it's out of control. There are so many people that have it right now that it's too late for them to get the vaccine. So he's actually setting up Remdesivir clinics in Florida right now for people to go in if they get this. And he's trying to find a way to make it free for people, which better late than never, I guess, Ron. But, you know, you could have prevented a lot of this and the need for this type of clinic to begin with, because that stuff isn't guaranteed to work. The monoclonal antibodies do help. But it's no guarantee that you're going to survive this kind of stuff.
Does he have veterinarians standing by with the tubes of ivermectin to shoot that down?
Yeah,
I remember watching my vet worm my horse with that stuff. It's like this big syringe and you can know, swallow it. So, yeah.
Yes, horse dewormer. That's the best thing. So I'm going to go upstairs and make myself some horse dewormer, mix it with some hydroxychloroquine and some remdesivir, and sit
vitamin
on the back porch today.
And B and zinc.
I'm going to call it the COVID cocktail. So there we go. All right. Real quick, the weekend's coming up. We've got a little bit left. Huge sports weekend here in Detroit. I would be remiss if I did not mention, of course, our Detroit Lions start the preseason today. Hey, yeah, we'll see. New era there. Miguel Cabrera about to hit his 500th home run and approaching 3,000 hits, which is a very, very difficult milestone to reach. That's a big deal. And the Pistons in the summer league. And Steve Fishman, I wanted to ask you about this because real quick, people have been irritating me. We've had two summer league games and they're already saying that Cade Cunningham might not have been the right pick in the draft. What can you actually learn over two summer league games in the NBA?
It depends on how much you know about basketball. Those who are talking like that probably don't know a whole hell of a lot about basketball. And they see that this kid Green, who's a great scorer, scores a few more points. So therefore it's the wrong pick. If you know anything about basketball, you know anything about team play, you look at a kid like Cunningham at age 19 and listen to him interviewed and watch him play, and the guy plays like a wise man. He can score if he has to. He passes the ball really, really well. He looks for his teammates. He's a good defender. When he was matched one-on-one with Green, he tricked the hell out of him the one time and drilled a three on him. But the long and the short of it is, like everything else in sports these days, everybody is trying to make conclusions and decisions based on two summer league games, for God's sake. It's not even exhibition season yet. It's just summer league. I say personally, they made the right pick. I think if everybody just sits and watches, you've got the right general manager in place. You've got the right coach in place. The key to the Pistons will be like with everybody else in every sport. They got to stay healthy. That's the key to it all.
Yeah, I think I wonder with Cabrera, are the Tigers going to tell him, don't hit a home run right now. Let people keep coming to the ballpark thinking you're going to hit that home run.
You know something, Lengel? I don't know how much hard baseball you play, but that's pretty kind of a difficult thing to do. The guy's throwing at 95. You can't really pick which day you're going to whack one out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm being facetious.
What Steve said about Cunningham, you also, Steve, when you see him talking to the players on the side when they call a timeout, he talks like he's 26, 27 years old. And the other, more importantly, the other players are listening to him. He's gained their respect by the quality of his play. So, yeah, I mean, I like him for his demeanor.
His leadership.
Yeah. He looks like a cool guy. I guarantee you he's going to have a little bit more fun than I am in the next few years. So that's okay.
A few more dollars than you, that's for
absolutely,
sure.
Absolutely. All right, we've got to wrap things up for this week. A lot of fun, actually, today, and some good discussion. I always appreciate it. Todd Perkins, thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks to Steve Fishman as well. Nancy and Alan, we'll see you again next week, of course.
All right.
And again, everybody, enjoy the cool down in the weather. The humidity is going to go away. Hopefully the storms cool down, calm down a little bit, and we actually get a break from this kind of stuff for a little bit. But in the meantime, Alan.
Drive home safely.
Looking for the latest news and information about our great city of Detroit? Head to DeadlineDetroit.com for one-stop shopping for the most important stories of the day. Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in town, providing original reporting, videos, and podcasts that keep you in the know about everything happening in Detroit. Become a member today, and you'll automatically be entered into a drawing for prizes, including gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Go to DeadlineDetroit.com/membership.